Tonight we're going to be finishing John. We've been in it for quite a while, and it's kind of sad to see it go bye-bye, but we're there now. So we're in John chapter 21, and we'll be covering verses 15 through 25 tonight. John 21, 15 through 17. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." If you remember from last week's teaching, the disciples returned to Galilee and were hanging out at the Sea of Tiberias. They were supposed to have been waiting for Jesus to show up, and Peter got bored and decided to go fishing. So six other disciples joined with him, and they fished all night and caught nothing. And at dawn, Jesus shows up on the shore and calls out to them. And he tells the disciples to throw their nets out on the right side of the boat, which they did, and to their surprise, they pulled in this huge catch of supernatural proportions. Recognizing that it was Jesus, Peter jumped in the water and swam to him. The other disciples decided to just stay in the boat and pull that catch up to the shore. And when they got there, they saw that Jesus already had a fire going, had cooked breakfast for them. And when they arrived, he invited them to eat. And when they had finished just enjoying this breakfast, which Jesus supernaturally provided, and they received their spiritual, supernatural nutrients, Jesus engages Peter in a very powerful and heartwarming discussion, a discussion that Peter would never forget. I want you for a moment to try to just grasp the intensity that I believe was just in this discussion. We have to remember that this discussion comes on the heels of one of history's most famous acts of denial. In Luke 24, 34, we are told that Jesus appeared to Peter sometime before the upper room appearance. However, we don't have a record of it. We have nothing that tells us, you know, if anything was said or not. So as far as we know, this is the first one-on-one discussion between the two of them after Peter denied the Lord. And then Jesus starts off, did you notice? He didn't refer to him as Peter, the term of endearment, the name of affection that Jesus had given him, but he calls him by his natural name, Simon, son of John. This was extremely intentional and highlights one of the important messages of this passage. Accordingly, Peter has this anticipation. Jesus calls him Simon. It's probably not too far of a jump to assume that he was still gripped with guilt and shame from his prior actions. Can you imagine after all Peter's boastings and all his proclamations, even though all may fall away, because of you, I will never fall away. And even if I have to, I will die with you. I will not deny you. Yet he totally folded and denied Jesus, not once, not twice, but with cursing three times. And now he's face to face with the one he denied. I'm sure Peter's mind was just racing, was just, you know, scared about this moment. What's going to happen? What is he going to say? Is he mad at me? Is he going to lower the boom or what? Is he going to embarrass me in front of the others? Is he going to cut me off? Is he going to cut me out? Am I done? Then in like manner to his three denials, three times Jesus addresses Peter. However, to the surprise of probably most everyone, his topic is not failure, and his topic is not sin, but it is love. The first question was, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Now, the subtleties of this passage do not cross over very well in English, for both the words love and these need a little explanation. As far as love, Jesus chose the verb form of agape, the word for God's divine love. Peter having at this time been born again and filled with the Holy Spirit, now has the ability to love God with God's love. In the past, he had no ability to love with divine love. Thus, his love, his commitment, his devotion, sincere affection, and all his well-meaning intentions were simply not enough. In fact, Peter was always doomed to fail. For the love that he had for Jesus was human love and was therefore, by definition, weak and plagued with all the self-seeking, self-preserving, narcissistic tendencies that tend to corrupt all of humanity. But now, all things had been made new. He had the Spirit, and he had access to God's divine love. So it was entirely possible for Peter to let that love fill him and overwhelm him such that he could love Jesus more than these. But Peter would have to choose to live either as Simon, son of John, or as Peter, to live in his old sinful nature or live in his new creation. The choice was his. These is an interesting word. It's a pronoun, but in the Greek, it allows for what we call variant parsing, which just means that it has two potential meanings, both being entirely valid. So it can be understood to be either a masculine pronoun, so in other words, Jesus was referring to those who were around Peter, or it can be neuter and refer to the boat, the fish, the sea, and his old way of life. So it is entirely possible that Jesus might have been asking Peter if he loved him more than the guys who had become his family over the past 3 years. See, Jesus was soon going to be expanding the family, and the numbers, like that great catch of fish, were going to be overwhelming. Therefore, it's possible Jesus did not want Peter to just attach himself to those with whom he felt safe, secure, and loved. But he was going to need to live outside of his comfort zone and care for others. Maybe this is why Jesus mentioned it. So this understanding is reasonable. However, there is nothing else in the overall content or context of the story which would lead us to conclude that this was an issue that Jesus was concerned with and felt he had to face. More than likely, I think it was the latter understanding. I think it was in the neuter tense. So going back to throwing the net on the right side of the boat, I believe Jesus was asking Peter if he is willing to give it all up and exchange his old life for the life that Jesus had chosen for him. Understand, this was a relational question about trust. Did he trust Jesus? About faith. Did he have faith in Jesus? About surrender. Was he going to give up his life for Jesus? It was a question about walking in the Spirit of God in the new creation. Do you love me more than the life you thought you would have? Do you love me enough to trust that fishing is not how I want to provide for you and your family? Do you love me enough to trust that I will provide for you? Do you love me enough to stay out of the boat, out of the water, and leave all that is familiar on the shore? Do you love me enough to rely on my divine love and not the strength of your own capabilities? Do you love me enough to care for those who are precious to me? See, this question was another way of asking Peter if he would choose to identify himself as one who had been born again of the Spirit of God, as one who is a child of God, as one whose life focus is to be about loving Jesus with the divine love that only Jesus gives. And in so doing, choose to no longer live as a slave, fearful, worried, because you blew it, because you've sinned. Instead, choose to live as a son. Choose to live as he were no longer just a fisherman. See, Jesus was asking Peter to choose to live from his new creation and just to turn his back on his old life, that life that his flesh knew so well. Do you love me more than these? Feed my lambs. I want you to notice that Peter is commanded to feed lambs. Not sheep, but lambs. It's a very specific word. And it's clearly a metaphor for those who are babes in the faith. So Peter's future, Jesus is telling him, entailed training or discipling those who were young in their faith so they could become mature and healthy sheep. And while that's exciting and getting purpose in your life is so totally cool, we must never put the cart before the horse and never take Jesus' words out of context. See, this is not intended to be understood as some standalone command for Peter to be about the work of the ministry. The contextual emphasis, again, is on Peter's relationship with Jesus and God's divine love in Peter. In other words, feeding the lambs, giving young believers Jesus' words of life that would sustain their souls, was to be an overflow of God's agape love filling Peter. Do you love me? You see, it's very important that we don't take a command like this and create a duty, a law, or burden, or even a career choice out of feeding the lambs. Jesus' instruction is to be understood as a relational expression or the fruit of having been filled with God's divine love and affection, an overflow from one relationship to another. In other words, if you trust yourself to Jesus, if you let him occupy more and more of your heart, he will provide for you a well, a deep well of his divine love from which you are able to choose to pour out his love on those who need to know why they can trust themselves to Jesus. And the beautiful part of a relational overflow is that caring for people is not a burden. If his love fills you, if his life is in yours, then your desires are his desires. Therefore, in the same way that Jesus said that his nourishment came from doing the will of God and from finishing his work, John 4:34, we will find that our nourishment and continual supply of God's divine love will come from doing the will of God and finishing his work. It will be our joy. It is interesting that Jesus asked Peter if he loved him, loved Jesus, with divine love. Yet Peter answered saying, I love you with strong affection and emotion. You see, in responding, Peter used the Greek word phileo, which stands for human love, our affection and emotion for each other. As such, Peter's reply was entirely non-responsive, even though he threw in a timely Lord just to give it the right spiritual spin. You see, having been burned in the past with his claims of undying loyalty, the best that Peter could now muster was, yes, I phileo you. I'm your friend. I love you. We can't be too hard on Peter. Keep in mind, being born again is entirely new. It's an experience that no one had before. And neither he nor any of the other disciples had yet fully understood all that Jesus had taught them about what it means to live from the new creation. And it is pretty clear that Peter had no idea that he had already been given everything he needs for life and godliness. He would talk about that in the future, but at this point, he didn't know it. In fact, it would take a releasing of unbelievable power in their lives on the day of Pentecost for any of the disciples to begin to understand what Jesus had done for them when he breathed on them and they were filled with the Spirit. Years later, Peter would write 1 and 2 Peter and explain this truth for us, especially in 2 Peter 1, where he assures us that we've been given everything we need for life and godliness through the knowledge of Jesus Christ. But sitting there at the shores of the Sea of Galilee, he was just beginning in his journey. And he had a lot to learn about letting Jesus live through him. But understand this, that by even implying, number one, that Peter could love Jesus with divine love, with agape love, and two, that Peter even had the capacity to love in this manner, you know what it would mean? It would mean that the divine one, the one who holds this love, had imparted himself into Peter and made him new, made him holy, made him righteous. For God's agape love is divine, it is pure, it is holy, and it is righteous. As such, it is entirely possible for Peter to love this way, even if right now he did not understand that to be true. Remember, agape love, Divine love can only be produced by the divine. It belongs exclusively to God. It comes from God, and it comes with God. And the only reason we can love with his love is because he lives in us. We are just the vessels through which he chooses to express his divine love. Now, the next couple of points are very critical to our understanding of the beauty of this whole passage, because it's beautiful. Even though Peter replied by saying, "Yes, I phileo you, I have affection for you," and did not even identify himself as having the ability to love with divine love, Jesus still implored him to feed the lambs. Jesus didn't push back and say, "Excuse me, didn't you mean to say agape?" No, there was no correction, no chastisement, no expression of disappointment or requirement that Peter fixes his theological or practical understanding of the truth before he was qualified to care for the lambs. Jesus just told Peter to feed his lambs, and this charge was not dependent upon Peter getting anything right. And this is marvelous. Please don't miss it. Jesus did not address or even consider the failings of Peter's flesh, his past denials, his refusal to wait for Jesus and instead go fishing, even his present non-responsiveness to the questions that Jesus asked. He didn't even correct him for his failure to understand the truth. Jesus just moves forward and deals with Peter based on whom he has made him. He deals with his new creation and tells him, "Peter, feed my lambs." See, this is why I think it's a mistake to treat this passage, as it so often is treated, as being, this is the restoration of Peter. See, that's simply not what is happening here. Peter is not being restored to anything or anyone. He was restored, perfectly reconciled to God when he was born again, when Jesus breathed into him the Holy Spirit. In fact, it is at that point in time that all the disciples were restored and, according to Romans 5:1, were made to be at perfect peace with God. You see, when they received the Holy Spirit, the old things passed away. All was made new. So what is going on here? Jesus is simply helping Peter to believe it to be true and understand how Jesus views Peter so that Peter can choose to live in this new life that he now possesses and move forward and feed the lambs. Please understand that this is exactly how Jesus deals with us and our failings. He knows that we live in these bodies of flesh, and he knows that we still have an old sinful nature, that we will fail. I mean, it's no surprise to him when we blow it. But he is not interested in our old sinful nature, what we would call our flesh. In fact, he will have nothing to do with it, for it is an enemy of God and always stands in opposition to him. Romans 8:4-11 and James 4:4. Jesus is interested in teaching us how to believe in him, how to live from our new creation and be the men and women that he has chosen us to be. Therefore, he never deals with us on the basis of sin, but on who we are in him and his desire for us to remain in ongoing fellowship with him. You see, true biblical obedience is not about not sinning. It's not about not blowing it, and it's not about not doing it right. It never has been. True biblical obedience has always been about the obedience of belief. Remember, Abraham was declared righteous just for believing before he did anything at all. Genesis 15:6 and Romans 4:3. From the beginning, God has wanted us to trust ourselves to him, all the while refusing to believe the lies with which our old sinful nature is constantly barraging us, and choose instead to believe the truth about God's character, his nature, and his love for us. Remember John 6:29. The work of God is that we might believe in Jesus. And John 20, 31, believe that he is our Christ. You see, if we believe, he will take care of the rest. He will literally, according to Ephesians 3, 17, occupy more and more space in our hearts. And with him comes peace, joy, and his divine love, because he is peace, joy, and love. Thus, as we trust him in each of these areas of our life, we will find that we love what he loves. And we will only do what he wants us to do. And guess what? He loves the little lambs. So guess what? We will love the little lambs. In fact, he will feed his lambs through us. And again, we will merely be the privileged vessels through which he chooses to love them. This reminds me of what Jesus said in John 14, 21. Those whom we find obeying his commandment to love others with divine love are the ones who have or possess divine love for him, which can only mean one thing. They are the ones who have believed that he is their Christ and have trusted themselves to him in both the practical and deeply intimate areas of their life. Thus, his divine love always precedes his divine appointments for our lives. Him filling us with his divine love always precedes our requirement to fulfill those duties. Jesus then said to Peter a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. Again, Jesus asked Peter if he has divine love for him. And once again, Peter replies by saying, look, you know, in your perfect knowledge, you know that all I have for you is human love and affection. It seems pretty much like the same routine. But this time, Jesus does not make Peter work through any comparative measure, right? Me versus these. He just says, do you love me? And Peter, again, responds with this limited understanding of the truth. And yet, Jesus still asks him to tend for his sheep. So despite Peter's continual failure to believe, what happens? Jesus now gives him even greater responsibility, hands-on care for the people which God will send him. The task of a shepherd is a very busy job. It's different than just nursing the lambs. Now you're having to care for the flock. It requires so much. So do you understand what Jesus is saying to Peter? He's saying, Peter, do you love me? Don't worry. I trust you. It's okay, Peter. You can do it. I love you. Don't worry about having blown it. My entire confidence is in you because I am with you. I am in you. It's okay. It's really okay. We will get it done together. It's kind of strange, but this whole conversation is kind of happening on two totally different dimensions, right? Jesus seems to be saying one thing, and it just kind of flies over Peter's head, and he doesn't quite comprehend it. Oh, sure, he understands the words, but to him, they mean something different. You see, Jesus' words are being filtered through Peter's worldly understanding of love, success, failure, religion, sin, and responsibility. Therefore, Jesus' words just go, whew, right on by his head. You ever feel that way when you read your Bible? You think you know what it says, but later on, you know, the Spirit gives you a glimpse of what he was really saying, and it's like, you know, you get all frustrated, wondering why you could not figure it out before. I mean, it happens to me all the time. I read something in the Bible, especially when I'm studying for these teachings, and if I am not careful to see with his eyes and understand with his mind, I naturally start to filter everything through my limited understanding. And through all my personal prejudices that I carry around. And his words fly right over the top of my head. I understand his words, just like Peter understood. But the meaning of those words are so often lost on me. And this is why God is our entire provision. He gives us that understanding. You know what? He actually says that he gives us his mind so we can understand him, understand how he speaks, understand his secret wisdom. And he says it's available to us. In fact, he tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 that the reason he has given us the Spirit is so that we can know the wonderful things of God, even his deep secrets. See, Jesus wants us to not miss any of it. He wants us to take each word and understand how everything he said communicates his love for us. And he wants us to know how deep that love goes so we can begin to experience his love wrapped around our lives. And he wants us to mature from these little lambs that need nursing into mature sheep that can just graze the fields that he leads us into. And then to put the icing on the cake, and to perfectly communicate how strongly Jesus feels about this issue, to metaphorically just cancel out in Peter's mind any remnant of hesitation caused by his three denials, Jesus says to him this third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." This is absolutely fascinating. Jesus did not employ divine love in this final question. You know what he did? He utilized phileo, human love. "Peter, do you have human love and affection for me? Feed my sheep." This is mind-blowing. You get the implication? You understand what Jesus is saying? "Peter, even the fact that you have any amount of human love for me proves that I loved you first. Proves that I chose you, qualified you, and now have given you the assignment. And guess what? It all had nothing to do with you. Nothing at all to do with what you did or could do or ever would do for me. In fact, while you were still a sinner, I died for you so that you can love me." Romans 5:8. And this is entirely consistent with what he told his disciples in John 15:16. "You did not choose me, but I chose you." The only reason Peter could have any affection for Jesus is because Jesus first loved him. And in this final question, Jesus was basically communicating the following. You were not seeking me. Your heart was hard. You didn't love me, but you know what? I was seeking you. And guess what? I found you. And guess what? I like what I found. You're exactly what I wanted. So go ahead, go out, feed my sheep. It's okay. I know you blew it. Big deal. It doesn't matter to me. I know you don't feel worthy, but you are. I died for you and made you worthy. I love you, so feed my sheep. I don't think Peter had any clue what was going on here. His mind was just like, whoa, whoa. He was grieved that Jesus employed the phileo word instead of agape word. It just confused him. And it was like, hey, wait a minute. You're questioning whether I love you? He was still running this through his filter of negativity and not understanding that Jesus was communicating something so powerful for him. I think he was thinking, okay, I admitted that I don't have agape love for you. I haven't done it right. I know it. I didn't do it. I admitted it. But phileo love, yes. By golly, I'm sitting here all wet. I'm soaked. I'm the one who jumped in the water. What are you thinking? I've been with you for 3 years. And he's getting grieved and upset. It's clear that he still was not purged from his pride. He was still living at that moment as Simon, son of John. And he just wanted Jesus to know that he loved him and get some recognition for all the ways he has proven it. Jesus, on the other hand, he just wanted Peter to know that he could only say that he loved Jesus because Jesus had first loved Peter. Like us, Peter's worldview, his emotional, intellectual, and spiritual framework, had no experience with a love that was not earned. It did not fit into any of his boxes, especially his religion box. This was entirely new, a totally fresh paradigm of existence. And because Jesus loved Peter, guess what? Peter could feed the lambs. Peter could shepherd the sheep. And he could even feed the sheep. I love the way Jesus communicated this message three times to Peter. And then he just kind of drops it. He emphasized the truth. And he actually didn't feel the need to convince Peter of this. He knew that the Holy Spirit was going to do that job, and he trusted that. And he knew that with some of these things, our believing, our trusting ourselves to God takes time and rain. And there was going to be plenty of time for Peter, which we'll find out later, and there was going to be plenty of rain. In fact, in just a couple of short weeks from this point in time, the rain was just going to start to pour out, and the Spirit was going to do an incredible move in the life of those disciples. And at that moment in time, as that rain started to pour, Peter believed. The Peter we see just 30 days from here is radically different. He's no longer Simon, son of John. He's Peter, chosen of God, loved of God. And he started to feed the sheep. It's amazing. It's so beautiful. God is amazing. We get so twisted up and we look at this stuff so wrong, and all he wants us to understand is how much he loves us. That's where the freedom lies. And so he asks each of you, do you love me? If so, let it fill you. Let it overflow from your life into others so that he can love me through you. And he can love others through you in an amazing way. He is so gentle, he is so merciful, and he is so beautiful. It has nothing to do with our doing it right. It has everything to do with him being perfect, him being holy, him being everything that we need. Verse 18 through 19. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you out where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. Thank goodness John kind of gave us that hint of explanation to us, or I'm sure people would have wrangled over this for centuries. See, Jesus is just using two contrasting word pictures to prophesy over Peter's life. The first is basically of a boy who gets to just run around and do whatever he wants. He gets dressed and he's out the door and he's doing whatever he wants. And the second is of an old man who simply can't. In other words, during his life, Peter was going to have great freedom in the spirit to do what God asked him to do, to feed the lambs, tend the sheep, feed the sheep. But when he was an old man, things would suddenly be different. The Romans would take his arms and stretch them out on that cross beam, nail his hands to that beam, and carry him to the upright where he would be crucified. Historical writers state that it was about 35 years from this day, from this event, that Peter was crucified under Emperor Nero. However, he deemed it so glorious a thing to die for Christ that he begged to be crucified with his head downwards, not considering himself worthy to die in the same posture in which Jesus died. And sure enough, Peter proudly endured the agonizing death and went home to be with Jesus. And as John predicted, it was a glorious death, and God was honored. After saying this to him, verses 19 through 23, he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned around and saw behind them the disciple Jesus loved, the one who had leaned over to Jesus during supper and asked, "Lord, who will betray you?" Peter asked Jesus, "What about him, Lord?" Jesus replied, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? As for you, follow me." So the rumor spread among the community of believers that this disciple wouldn't die. But that isn't what Jesus said at all. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" It is clear that when Jesus said, "Follow me," he meant, kind of first of all, spiritually, in that Peter was only to follow Jesus' voice in his life. But he was also meeting physically. He's like, hey, get up, come on, let's go, let's walk, come with me. We'll go a bit further, talk a little more. And we know this because John says that he's like kind of trying to sneak up behind him and is following them, you know. He didn't want to be left out. He couldn't help it, you know. He had this jealous rivalry going with Peter. It's like, wait a minute, why does he get to go? I want to go too. He didn't want to miss anything. And it's funny because I think John is actually poking at this silly rivalry. So he instantly reminds us that, oh, yeah, maybe Jesus didn't pull me aside and tell me anything super cool, but I was the one who was leaning on his chest at dinner time. It was me. Yeah, I was that one, the one whom Jesus loved. And I think John is absolutely just poking at himself and letting us know that despite these rumors that he was some super special, super cool disciple who would not die, he was just a normal guy filled with all the normal jealousies and competitiveness that we all seem to struggle with. And he points out that Peter had the same problem, you know, had the same insecurities going on. Instead of asking Jesus to explain, okay, let's go over this divine love again thing and how that's going to work, okay? Or when are you coming back? I want to know about that. Come on, let's talk about this stuff. He's like, hey, what about him? You know, what's going on with him? If there was ever a wasted opportunity, that was it. Private time with the resurrected Jesus, and Peter focuses on his petty rivalry with John. What about him? And I love the fact that Jesus didn't even, you know, scratch Peter's itch. Not at all. He just pointed Peter back to himself. What happens with John is my business. It is not yours. It does not matter if I let him live forever. All that matters is what I've asked of you. You follow me. And this is a good reminder for all of us. It is far too easy to take our eyes off of what God has asked us and put them on what somebody else is doing. And in those moments, we foolishly choose to see from our eyes and not his eyes, and understand with our minds and not his mind. Remember, in God's economy, everything seems to be upside down, inside out, and rarely makes sense to us. And he does what he wants to do, and he usually doesn't stop and ask our permission. So don't even waste your time trying to figure out how he is moving or to what extent he is moving with anybody else. I mean, besides, like Peter, we all have a hard enough time listening, waiting, and paying attention to his voice in our own lives that we don't need to be distracted by focusing on what he chooses to do with someone else. There's been times, I mean, obviously, where I think, you know, I might be missing something. I mean, I know people who have planted churches in less time than we've been around, and they've got these huge, big old churches. And every once in a while, I find myself thinking, am I doing something wrong? That would be kind of cool. Then there's times I see couples together, and I say, hey, what about me? And then I see people who, you know, own their homes, drive nice cars, get new clothes. And I think, hey, what about me? I'm working hard over here for you. Hello, you see? Give me some time and attention. I mean, that way of thinking is ridiculous. It is childish. It is short-sighted. And all those thoughts are just focused on me, 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 me. That me monster is just like, you know, waiting to prowl if we ever feed him, give him any attention. So we can't do it. That's why Jesus says, you follow me. That's it. Don't worry about that. You follow me. See, we have to remember that God is in control. And he is our good shepherd. And he is doing with each of us exactly what he wants. And we have to remember that. We are his sheep. He chose us. And he purchased us with his very own blood. And he loves us and wants nothing more than for us to experience him and always remain in his love. These truths need to be our maniacal focus, not what's going on with others. We don't need to be looking back and looking around. We need to just stay focused on what he's asked of us. He will do his job. And all he wants us to do is follow. Verse 24 through 25. This disciple is the one who testifies to these events and has recorded them here. And we know that his account of these things is accurate. Jesus also did many other things. And they were all written down, I suppose the whole world cannot contain the books that would be written. The one whom Jesus loved is the one who wrote this gospel. And as he has stated before, we can know that his testimony is true. First of all, he says, we know it. This was an obvious challenge to anyone who doubted anything that John wrote. He said, come out, search the truth. There are plenty of people around here who followed him, heard what he said, saw what he did. Interview him, talk to him. I'll guarantee you everything I said will be corroborated time and time again. And he had total confidence that if anyone really wanted to come and honestly check out the facts, that there would be no question that he did not exaggerate or expound on anything. But all was written exactly as it happened. Then just to make the point, okay, to make the point of contrast, he actually includes a little hyperbole. I suppose the whole world could not contain the books that would be written. So beyond stirring up our imagination about the incredible things in which he got to participate in and the marvel of Jesus, John wrote this last statement to make a clear contrast between the way he wrote with such precision and definition to something that is more akin to mythology or legend, which accompanies most historical literature. And he compares it to the facts which he has attested to and to which he has given sworn testimony. And this is why John gave us that minuscule detail and minutia. The slave girl, not just a slave, not just a girl, but a slave girl. The charcoal fire, all those little details he gave us so that we would know that he was an eyewitness to the events he wrote about. And as we studied last week, he did it all so that we would be convinced that Jesus was the Christ, our Christ. So he throws in the obvious hyperbole so you know that nothing else in his entire gospel looks like this last statement. Nothing. So we can know that it is true. So you got to ask yourself, do you believe? Do you really believe? Do you just call him Lord? Like Peter did, just throwing it in there like chump change. Or is he your Lord? I mean, we have finished this marvelous book, and it's blown me away chapter by chapter by chapter, verse by verse. It's just blown me away. But I think the one thing